Welcome to the Fearless Women Podcast. We're inspiring conversations for the unafraid. I'm Janice McDonald, founder of the Beacon Agency, author, and global champion for women. Why am I making this show? Because I want to share the inspiring stories of women leaders in business, arts and culture, politics, and more with all of you. Hear how they've chosen to go forward and be bold and make the world a better place, even when it wasn't easy to do. Subscribe now wherever you find podcasts. Hey, everybody, I'm Janice McDonald. Welcome to the Fearless Women Podcast. Today, I'm very excited to welcome the Deputy Minister of National Defense, the incredible Jodi Thomas. Welcome to the podcast, Jodi.
Thank you so much, Janice. It's a real honor to be here.
She's had an impressive career of service, including as the Commissioner of the Canadian Coast Guard, Chief Operating Officer of Passport Canada, and so many other important roles. She's a trailblazing leader who continues to inspire. We're going to talk about so many things today. I'm really excited. So welcome.
Thank you.
And thank you and welcome to our listeners from around the world, including USA, UK, Australia, Mexico, and so many more countries. We want our community to grow, so please tell your friends and follow us on Instagram. Thanks also to our amazing sponsors, 30% Club Canada, BDC, Lockheed Martin, Export Development Canada, and ADGA. So, Jodi, your current role as Deputy Minister of National Defense follows a long and impressive career of service. I recall a funny way that you began your career of service. Can you share that?
Yeah, it is kind of funny. A bit embarrassing now as I look back because I have children the age I was. But we had just moved to Ottawa. My father was in the military and he and my mother had gone to work for the day and I was left a list of chores and I hadn't done any of them. And he found me floating in the backyard in the pool. And 2 weeks later, I was signed up to join the Naval Reserve. Because he thought I needed A, a job, and B, a bit of discipline in my life. And it turns out he was quite right.
Aha. Uh-huh. And we're all the luckier for it.
Oh. It was prescient. And I can say honestly that joining the Naval Reserves at 17 absolutely changed my life. Everything that I value in my life is as a result of that decision. Or it wasn't my decision. Decision's the wrong word. Of that
commitment.
Action. Commitment.
Yes.
Exactly. So, yeah, really, really important thing that happened to me.
17 and never looked back.
I looked back a lot.
Okay.
You know, there were times where I questioned why I was there and what I was doing. And at the same time was so committed to it. And I believed in it so deeply. I grew up in a military family. So being in the military felt right.
Yeah. So what will it take, in your view, for more women to consider a career in defense and security? And are there any myths to dispel? Because it can be, as your career is an example of, very rewarding. So how do we get more women looking at that as an option?
It's such an important question. The opportunities in the defense and security world are endless. Whether you are in industry, whether you're in management, whether you're in the military, whether you're in the civil service, the opportunities are endless. And we are looking for bright women to change the agenda and drive things forward. And so it is a career, it is a field where women should not feel limited. And I would say in 2019 are no longer limited. So many impressive women in the military, in industry. I know you've talked to many mm-hmm. of them mm-hmm. Who are real trailblazers themselves and are making room for women. The myths are that you're not welcome. The myths are that it's not safe. The myths are that it is a very chauvinistic, misogynistic environment. And perhaps that was true. In fact, it was true at one time. There are still some behaviors that need to be stopped, but we're working hard at that. And I think the more women who are in the field, you have a critical mass. When you have a critical mass of women supporting each other, everything changes.
Absolutely. And my understanding is, if I look at the commitments in terms of the Canadian Armed Forces, they're very progressive, right? Leading in the world in terms of that approach to women and inclusion. So maybe it's more the industry that's lagging.
Industry is getting there. And just in this city, there's some very impressive women leading
Absolutely.
Huge defense consulting firms and defense suppliers. You know, and the largest company in the world is led by a woman, mm-hmm. and she's extraordinary. So I think the industry itself is quite different than how it's perceived.
Ah, all right. So there's a myth that needs to be dispelled right there.
Right there.
Yeah. And I think it's really exciting when we think about looking at career opportunities for women that perhaps it hasn't been. So maybe women, too, have to update their own thinking mm-hmm. around it, where possibilities are in terms of good jobs and exciting career opportunities.
Exactly. I think that we haven't done a very good job of talking about it. The military is aggressively recruiting women and really working hard to ensure that it's a workplace where women feel safe and feel they have a career future, where you can have a family and you can have a rewarding career. I think those things matter. And they don't matter to all women, but those who it does matter to, mm-hmm. there's space. On the civilian side of things and in the private sector side of things, we don't talk about it enough. We don't go out there and actively recruit women, and we don't talk about the fact that, you know, some of the biggest jobs in this city are held by women. So obviously there's no glass ceiling.
Right.
Like, just go dig in and let's start recruiting more aggressively. We're not going to job fairs at university and saying, women, come and work at company X because here's what's ahead for you. Mm-hmm. And we need to do more of that.
Mm-hmm. Maybe it's as simple as telling the stories of the opportunities.
Right.
Take me back, Jody, to the 10-year-old girl. What was that girl like? Where were you living? You said you're in a military family. So did that take you around the country and the world?
It took us around the country, not the world. Mm-hmm. My parents lived abroad before my sister and I were born. At 10, I was living in Dartmouth, Nova Scotia, mm-hmm. and I was a tomboy. There was nothing that I couldn't do in my mind. I was probably a little rough around the edges and not overly sophisticated about the world. Mm-hmm. I lived in my world of sports. I lived in my world of my family and my friends. And we lived in rural Dartmouth. And so it was a very outdoor life.
Mm-hmm. And very community, I would think, too.
The Navy community was very, very strong. And some of my closest friends are the kids I grew up with in various cities that I've stayed in touch with over the years. And I'm very blessed by that.
That's incredible because mm-hmm. when we think often about moving, we don't always bring the connections along with us as children,
right?
At least in the past. So
the four daughters of my parents' closest friends, we met for the first time when we were sort of 6, 7, 8, and we are friends to this day.
Wow.
Visit each other, stay connected through you know, Facebook and various things, celebrate each other's milestones, mourn together as our parents have aged, and some of my friends have lost their parents. So I'm very blessed by that. And it is a connection. Our parents were friends for 60 years, and we're now going on 50 years of friendship.
Wow. That's super inspiring.
Yeah, it's very cool. We didn't grow up in one community, any of us, but we have our own community because of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but you created that.
Yeah.
And you nurtured it.
Mm-hmm.
So another powerful community, we both share an interest in mental health and share a friendship with Stephanie Richardson. She was on the show and talked about DIFD and her commitment to youth mental health. How did this become so important in your life?
I listened to your podcast with Stephanie and I thought it was just extraordinary. I was the president of the hockey association Darren was playing in when she passed away, and Luke was coaching my daughter. And we had to, in the immediate news of Darren's passing, tell her teammates. And I was there when they learned the news, and it makes me very emotional still.
Mm-hmm.
I told them the news and I watched those girls. And I watched them process something that was unimaginable and mm-hmm. extraordinarily difficult. They were very young.
Mm-hmm.
And then I watched
and
them.
And very close,
and
too.
Very close. Yeah. That mm-hmm. group of girls had played hockey together for so long mm-hmm. and they loved each other.
Mm-hmm.
They were a lovely group of girls, still are. And I watched the anger and the upset and the hurt and then the energy and the determination to remember and honor their friend and to try and make sure that nobody else went through this.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when Stephanie says it was a youth-driven movement, grassroots, she's so right. There's absolutely no pretense
machine
in that.
Or
no,
anything
no
behind
machine.
It.
No. No, there's no corporation. It was those kids.
Selling $5 bracelets.
Absolutely.
One at a time.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And I watched the strength and the courage of the Richardsons. And my family had been touched by depression and mental wellness issues. And I just thought, enough. Mm-hmm. And we didn't handle it well when it happened in our family. We didn't talk about it.
Well, also society didn't handle it well. There was no space for it.
No. And so I took inspiration from the courage. The courage isn't even the word to describe them and what they've done. And I took.
And continue to do.
Yes. And I take inspiration from it. And it drives me because I look around the workplace. I look around our community. And we need to help people. Mm-hmm. We need to talk about it differently. You know, in a work environment, somebody has a cold, you ask them to stay home. Yeah. They're struggling with their depression, you ask them to snap out of it, right? That's what society
has
done.
Which is crazy. Yeah. It doesn't make any sense.
So we have to help people. Mm-hmm. And it is all the more important in the department that I work in now.
High stress.
Yeah, high stress.
Constant stress,
post-traumatic stress injuries, valuable human beings who we need to continue to invest in and support.
Who have served their country and made an important contribution.
Right. And their mental wellness is part of the whole being. And the military, again, the senior leaders in the military have been very good about making that a focus. So I've been able to transport something that is a passion and a driving force in my personal life to my work, which is really important. And Stephanie has come and spoken to us at National Defense and inspired some very big old soldiers.
Mm-hmm. You know, With her big heart. Yeah, it's incredible. Actually, when you look at the impact that, of course, the family, but also, as you've indicated, those remarkable young hockey playing women who came together and said, we can do better. We can do differently. Let's remember and let's make change. And it's the ripples are absolutely incredible because it goes so far. Mm-hmm. It's beyond our country. Mm-hmm. You know, it's having this amazing impact.
Truly, you know. About 6 months after Darren passed, my father phoned me, and he lives in Victoria and retired, and he's on the golf course, and there had been an article in the Globe and Mail, and he said, wow, when a bunch of 75-year-old, he was 75 at the time, 75-year-old men are talking about the mental health of their grandchildren, something has changed. Mm-hmm. He said, a conversation I would have never thought to have, and he said, thank your friends, because it's amazing and it's extraordinary. And so the ripples are generational. They have no geographic boundaries. They have no socioeconomic boundaries. Everybody is understanding everybody. More and more people are understanding this is a critical conversation. Mm-hmm. And it's not one, as Steph and Luke both said, talk about sex, you talk about drugs, you talk about drinking with your kids. But did you talk about this? We didn't.
Mm-mm.
And
exactly.
It matters.
And it does matter. Yep. There's so much that's been powerful and important in terms of outcomes. But to your point, I think one of the really transformative things has been that we can talk about it now, that we are inspiring those conversations.
Absolutely.
And that has lasting impact because if I look at my own experience in having been involved with the Royal Ottawa Hospital, which is focused on mental health here in our community, in the early days of, I think about the first fundraising breakfast we had. Well, nobody wanted to come and support it except for Big Pharma. You know, companies did not want to be associated with that cause. And if I look at where we are now in 2019, the kind of community support, not only here, but beyond. And really, I do think the Richardsons have made such an incredible impact in how we think about mental health and that confidence that we have about talking about it.
Truly. I agree completely.
What about resilience? How do we build resilience in the workplace, in our teams, in our young people?
It's such an interesting question, isn't it? Because I believe that resilience is actually perhaps the one factor that differentiates leaders. Because we're all intelligent and everybody gets work done and everybody can grind through and manage meetings and come to conclusions and outcomes on files. But what separates us is probably resilience, and it's your ability to stand back up after a failure, mm-hmm. I think, and to regroup.
Or many,
right. Yeah. And regroup. Something mm-hmm. went wrong yesterday. How do you regroup and move forward? How do you keep positive? How do you continue to move forward? And some of it is, I think, allowing people to fail and then helping them see that the grace is in the recovery. Helping them have confidence in themselves, stop second guessing. And a lot of that is about giving people enough wing, you know, mm-hmm. to spread mm-hmm. their wings a little bit and bring them back when they need to. And when I think about my career, certainly training as a military officer teaches you resilience mm-hmm. because you're tested constantly. Mm-hmm.
And we do have world-class training in Canada.
We truly have world-class training. Our military is one of the best trained in the world. Very small, but sure punches above its weight. I think in other settings that are not military, it's about testing is the wrong word because there's a pejorative connotation to that. Mm-hmm. Giving people a bit of space, bringing them back, giving them space, helping them see where they've erred. It's like a testing system all the time to see who can respond and help people when they haven't responded appropriately, regroup, reassess, try again. And resilience is born out of being given second chances. We too often fail to give people second chances. One mm-hmm. failure and that's it. They're written off. If that had happened to me, I don't know what I would be doing for a living. I failed very publicly and very early in my career at something, and it was horrible. What did I do? I struggled for a bit. I suffered for a bit. And then I got myself together and moved on. Probably the greatest lesson of my career.
Wow. And it came early.
And it came early.
Which is amazing.
It was horrible. But I learned a lot. And I don't want anything that devastating as what I went through to happen to other people. But the two steps forward, one step back thing is not bad. Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. We'll get you to where you need to go. Mm-hmm. And you'll get stronger as you get there.
Mm-hmm. What about then the role of mentors and champions? Have they been part of your career?
Indirectly, yes. Mm-hmm. I haven't had a specific mentor, but mm-hmm. there's been various people throughout my career who've been very kind to me and have taken me aside and told me and talked me through, you could have handled this differently.
Mm. So some wise counsel.
Wise counsel more than mentoring. That's exactly the word. You know, a couple of bosses in particular who told me, you know, you're a little aggressive. You're a little obnoxious. Mm. You got to step back. And it was very useful. And it was true. I think that I went through a period in my career where I thought you had to be an extraordinarily aggressive woman to get anywhere. And I don't think you do have to be extraordinarily aggressive, precise, correct, do your homework, know your subject, come prepared. But you don't have to take over a room to get anywhere. Mm. And that was a really important lesson. And I have had some people champion me and sponsor me. I went to a seminar and somebody was talking about the difference between women and men in the workplace, and men are promoted on potential mm-hmm. and women are promoted on achievement. Mm-hmm. Men are sponsored, women are mentored. Mm-hmm. Well, I had some men take risks on me and promote me based on potential and champion me. And because of that, I became the commissioner of the Coast Guard. And that was some men and one very important woman saying, okay, we're going to give her a chance. And I needed that chance. And, it, you know, the first year of it wasn't all easy.
It wasn't supposed to be.
No, none of it is. But right. People who have the courage and the kindness and the leadership to take you aside and say, here's how you could have approached this. Mm-hmm. What would you do differently? How do you think that went? Are really, really important people in your lives.
So on the one hand, you know, when you say, ah, I was deemed aggressive, and you've had a shift in terms of that approach. But we do know that we are, broadly speaking, judged more harshly mm-hmm. in those ways, right? This is a common thing that we hear from successful women leaders. Oh, you're too this and you're too that. And aggressive is often one of the words.
Absolutely. And it happens. And there's times where I think, no, I wasn't too aggressive. Right. You're just saying that.
It's an easy fallback.
It is. But the incident in question, I actually said to my boss, you're just saying this to me because I'm a woman. He said, no, I'm saying it to you because you're obnoxious. That was over the top. And he recounted to me what I had done in the meeting. And he was absolutely right.
Like, so recalibrate.
Exactly. But yes, on the whole, women are, it's a bit more pejorative. Mm-hmm. Bossy, not a leader.
Yep.
Aggressive, not assertive. Those kinds of labels and that kind of judgment occurs all the time.
And can be very damaging.
Mm-hmm.
So in this case, you gave this, yes, all right, I had to recalibrate. But that's also part of the leadership journey.
Right.
Recognizing, all right, well, maybe that's not the right approach here under these or anywhere, depending mm-hmm. on what's happening. But at the same time, to your point, assertive, aggressive.
Right.
That's frustrating.
Absolutely. And so some of that noise you just ignore. Mm. And that's what I've done throughout my career. Thank you. No, yeah. Not interested right. in your feedback, because I did exactly what I was going to do, and I'm very confident in the direction I took. And now, in the position I'm in, I'm able to determine just how assertive or aggressive I want to be in a mm-hmm. meeting, and I can calibrate because it's my room,
yeah,
right? So I get to own it. My style has changed. It's softened. I'm more considerate, I think, of people. Mm-hmm. I try to bring people along with me. I don't need to step over others any longer, and I want to work in a team. At the same time, you know, I'm far from perfect, and I'm going to achieve my outcomes. So mm-hmm. I work very hard and very aggressively to get there. And there are some people, I'm sure, who would still say it's too much, mm-hmm. where they would not say that about a male colleague.
We know this.
Yeah.
With certainty.
Yes.
So what would be some advice for ambitious women who want to get ahead in their career, regardless of what industry they're in?
So I think the first piece of advice I have, and I always tell young women this, women of any age this, in any stage of their career, one, be really good at what you're doing in the moment. Leaders, bosses, see who is looking at the next job rather than doing their current job. And so do your own job extraordinarily well. Understand what your strengths are and look for jobs that complement your strengths. I'm an operational thinker. I have a very short attention span. I like to see outcomes. I'm never going to be in a big policy job. That's just not how my brain has worked. Mm-hmm. It's not where my strengths are. So I've always sought out jobs that suit who I am. So square peg, square hole. Right. You really have to. Mm-hmm. And find jobs that suit your lives. There were times in my life with two little kids and my husband was unwell for a while. I couldn't be in a job that required me to be at the office 24/7. Mm-hmm. I had to make choices. So I think it's important for women to know there's a lot of time, right? Mm-hmm. 35, 40, 45 years of a career is a lot of time. You don't need to do everything at once. So understand what you're going to focus on. And when my kids were little, I focused on my kids. Mm-hmm. And now they're out of the house and I'm at work 24/7.
Yeah. And loving it.
Yeah. And my husband understands that. We have that ability to do that. But you have to choose jobs that suit your life. The workplace isn't going to bend to you. Mm-hmm. As much as work-life balance matters, you have to choose a job that suits your life. Mm-hmm. And I would say that women need to pursue their dreams. There is no reason why you can't. And that inner voice that too many women have that say, no, not you. No, pursue your dreams. I have to be in jobs that I'm passionate about. I have to be in a department that I truly believe in their mandate, and it's important to me and it speaks to me, and I'm there now. Follow your dreams. Be passionate about what you do, and it is okay to be passionate. I think that,
in fact, it's the best.
It is. Right?
It makes it so much easier.
There was a time, though, where, so much emotion. You know, people would say passion was emotion. No, mm-hmm. it's not. Mm-hmm. It's okay to feel mm-hmm. your job.
It drives commitment,
too. It does drive commitment. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you want committed employees mm-hmm. and you want committed leaders and you want passionate leaders. Mm-hmm. Clear thinking and passionate can coexist.
Agree.
Logical and passionate can coexist. Mm-hmm. It's not one or the other. Mm-hmm. I think women are seen often as too binary, and we're not.
Mm-mm. Mm-mm. I think so many of the ways that women approach work and life really are a competitive advantage.
I do too. Multitasking is actually what women can do. Mm-hmm. You know, and goes back to the dawn of time, right? Where women had to multitask and men hunted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what's the last thing, and this is a funny question to ask somebody who does fearless feats for a living, but what's the last thing that you've done that's scared you or at least been a bold move?
That's a very difficult question. I don't know if there's one thing. I think daily challenging the norms of where I am. There are days where I make a very conscious decision that I'm going to do or say something, challenge a long-held belief, and live the consequences of doing that, because it needs to be done. It has to be questioned. We've been doing this way for 100 years. Where I work, those questions cause significant ripples.
Mm-hmm.
And
because they're big questions,
they're
too.
Big questions. So there's no one act. It's just, why do we allow ourselves to to perpetuate certain myths and certain ways of doing things in the Department of Defense, why can we not be better? And that better is a range of things, from our reputation to, you know, Operation Honor, which is about harassment and assault mm-hmm. in the military, but it's actually the entire department. Mm-hmm. We can be better. And that challenge to be better takes energy every single day. And it opens me up to a lot of criticism from, you know, a mm-hmm. fair number of men who aren't terribly interested in what I have to say or changing how they do things. Mm-hmm. And so sort of every day I steel myself for what's going to happen. How do we do it differently? How do we do it better? And it's inspiring, but you don't know what the reaction's going to be. Mm-hmm. And so it's a challenge.
But the one thing you know for certain is committing to that, the implications and the outcomes are so significantly better. You know, if people can bring their whole selves to work and feel that this is an incredible, and it is an incredible place to be, isn't that powerful? Isn't that exciting?
Exactly. And I'm not sure people have always felt they could bring their entire person mm-hmm. to work. And we need every bit of everybody. Mm-hmm. There is no space to discard human beings.
The varied experiences and mm-hmm. and perspectives and, you know, well, and we know the research is clear. Diverse
right.
rooms and tables, et cetera, make for better outcomes, better innovation, you know.
Exactly.
Better preparedness,
right.
all of it.
In our world, you know, when we send troops overseas and they're diverse and they're a mix of culture and gender and background and race, we do better work. Mm-hmm. The impact of women in peacekeeping, the role of women, peace and security to build communities, because that's what we try to do, is you mm-hmm. don't want to take out communities. You don't want to get rid of a city. You want to build resilience back into a community. Women help with that. Women are critical in peacekeeping operations. Women are critical in combat operations, along with everybody else who makes Canada what it is. And we're so fortunate in this country. For so many people around the world, women and girls in particular, their world is small and it is frightening. Mm-hmm. And Canadian women bring hope. It's just powerful.
Oh, you're so inspiring. So you've had a chance to meet so many incredible people in your work, including members of the royal family. What's your advice to women on how to prepare for important days in their career?
Sleep. Get a lot of sleep if you can. Appreciate the moment. Mm. Know that you're doing something unique and special. When Stephanie Richardson and I and some other colleagues met the Duke and Duchess of Cambridge, it still runs a shiver up my spine thinking about Luke and Stephanie talking to the Duke and Duchess about mental health and youth mental health. And I sat in a room and thought, this has to be imprinted on my brain. I have to remember it. There is nothing wrong with enjoying an important moment. And I think we were sort of trained to think, oh, well, I don't want to make a big deal of it because people will think that I'm bragging or something. No. Enjoy those special moments, learn from them, take strength from them, help them inspire you going forward, and know your business. Always. Everything is about preparedness. Mm-hmm. And so when you have an opportunity to talk about what you do or yourself or your passions with somebody important, know your business and make that 30 seconds impactful, which is what I watched Luke and Stephanie do with the Duke and Duchess. It was extraordinary.
So incredible.
It was.
And so big in terms of the influence and outcome to have, you know, a global discussion, if you will, around an important topic.
Absolutely. Because there is no one conversation about something like mental health. Every conversation makes a difference. Every perspective makes a difference. And I think the Prime Minister and his wife were in the room as well. And they left with a little new piece of knowledge. And they'll remember what they heard that day. Mm-hmm. If you have an opportunity to make an impact, know what you're going to say, understand why it matters, and be confident in yourself talking about it.
So important. Don't let that moment pass.
No.
Grab it. Your passion is clear, your commitment unwavering. Final question. What is your dream for Canada?
So I am an unabashed patriot. I've traveled to a lot of countries. I've met a lot of people in my various jobs, and I'm extraordinarily proud of being Canadian. My wish for Canada is that Canada continues to develop and evolve as we are the compassionate, open, caring country, mm-hmm. one that cares about people, one that treats everybody equally, that cares about the climate, cares about social issues, understands that our place in the world matters, mm-hmm. and that we need to invest in our place in the world, and we need to ensure Canada is heard because our voice is unique. And I just think we're fortunate that we're so accepting and that we're so open and we care. Mm-hmm. And this country is so vast and so beautiful and so extraordinary, and the desire to protect it and keep that, I think, will drive generations into the future. Being Canadian is a very, very special thing.
I agree. It's such a beautiful dream for Canada.
I'm inspired by people who have big and bold visions for this country and who have moved it along. You know, the next 50 years for this country, I think, are going to be extraordinary.
I couldn't agree more. Jodi Thomas, Deputy Minister of National Defense, an incredible woman, a passionate leader, and an inspiring woman in service. Thank you so much for joining us today on the Fearless Women podcast.
Thank you, Janice.
Thanks for listening. We want our community to grow. Tell your friends, follow us on Instagram, and sign up for our newsletter at fearlesswomenpodcast.com to get the early scoop. Thanks again to our amazing sponsors, 30% Club Canada, BDC, Lockheed Martin, Export Development Canada, and ADCA. Subscribe in Apple Podcasts or in your favorite app. And if you like what you hear, give us a 5-star rating. I'm Janice McDonald. Stay fearless. Thank you to the 30% Club Canada for your support of the Fearless Women podcast. The 30% Club believes that gender balance on boards and in senior management not only encourages better leadership and governance, but diversity further contributes to better all-around board performance and ultimately increased corporate performance for both companies and their shareholders. Want to learn more? Visit their website, 30%club.org, and select the Canada chapter to find out about membership, supporters, and key resources. Thank you to BDC, the bank devoted exclusively to entrepreneurs, for your support of the Fearless Women podcast. We love smart companies that want to amplify women's voices. For more information, go to bdc.ca/women.